we're going to be interviewing Angel Taylor. So Angel has got a beautiful life story. She's shared very openly that she's had some struggles, she's had some challenges, and she's overcome them all. She's now very, very strong within herself, and her kaupapa right now is mana wahine, te mana o te wahine, empowering our wahine and helping them to find who they are and stand firm in that. So it'd be lovely when she's available, and yeah, we'll just see if we can dial her in. One of the things I really I noticed about this beautiful wahine is that many, many years ago, she was one of the first young, beautiful Māori wahine in Mauana I te Mokokauai. She was one of the first, one of the first, and she was mainstream one of the first. She was on, I think it was a Natural Glow ad, and I just looked and I thought, wow, how beautiful. And she joins us now. Nei te mihi nui ki a koe, my sister.
Oh, kia ora, my sis. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Kia ora. It's so beautiful to have you on with us. Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Oh, totally. No, that's all good.
So I just did a little bit of an intro, but I'll ask you to introduce yourself to our audience, to our listeners, and to everybody that will be watching or listening to you tonight. So kei a koe, heha tō whakapapa, what's your kōrero?
So I'm originally from Rotorua, so my whakapapa there, so on my dad, he is originally a Fraser Taylor, and just born and bred, born in Whakapane, but raised in Rotorua with my dad. My mother, she's from Kawerau te Tiko, Ngāti Awa, and dad's Ngāti Pakowi. And at the moment I'm just living in Tāmaki Makaurau and just being a mum really and being a nanny.
A nanny, wow. Yeah. Oh lovely. I haven't joined that club yet, but I can't wait. I'm gonna steal my moko. I've already told my kids. Just, you know, they can grow the baby and I'll have the baby. Oh, that's beautiful, sis. So, Rotorua, we've got to love Rotorua, born and bred, and Kawerau, so some very special places that you're from. Tell us a little bit about your life story and what has brought you to this space now with your mana wahine kaupapa, just what you want to share.
Right, where do we start? Nah.
Wherever you like.
Hey, it's a bit of a big one. Nah.
Take the point, I got time.
Yep. So, it's pretty much, you know, so I'm somebody that, one of the wahine of a few, quite a few here in Aotearoa that have experienced a bit of a hectic life from a baby pretty much. So as a, you know, how I came into this world, you know, my biological mother ended up just not in the right mind frame back in the 80s, you know, and my parents that I have still today, they're my step parents, and they whānaued me when I was basically 3 months old, hence why I've been brought up in Rotorua. So but when I look back at that now, I can see that there would have been a lot of traumatic scenarios happening around my biological mother and all the things that was going on in, at that particular time. However, it did hinder me, you know. It did affect me as I started getting older. So I remember at the age of 4, I was already experiencing traumatic nightmares and, you know, my parents used to always tell me that as a toddler, as a baby, I used to just wake up in the middle of the night just screaming like a horror movie, just from nightmares and trauma, you know, and that's just the beginning. And so to try and care for that, like a traumatized baby, a traumatized child, I guess it can be quite a bit, put a bit of strain on parenting. I understand that now, being a parent myself. But, you know, like, so just from there on out, I have a good understanding, and here's why I went through a lot of the things I did go through, because I really just didn't know who I was. So growing up, coming into a child, and then, you know, loved school. Fully in, I went to Rotokawa Primary, then I went to Makoya Intermediate, and then went to Western Heights High School in Rotorua. Loved every bit of it, but once I hit high school, at the end of intermediate, I was bullied quite a bit for being too pretty and too tall. And yet I was the biggest tomboy. You know, I didn't even like boys. But it really did do some damage on me. And then at home, see, we live, our whenua is our Rotokawa. And on our farm, you know, we have relatives that live, there was only three to four houses up in our whenua, our Rotokawa there, and there was our house, and then there was an uncle's house, and he was the mongrel mob, and then there was our koro's house at the back of us. And, you know, just growing up in that environment, it just led me down, you know, the hood ways is all we had. And so you're growing into your teens, you're obviously having, you know, you go through puberty and all of that. But however, for myself, I never really got to experience like a normal wahine, just getting her mate or any of that. I ended up being in a situation where that was taken from me. And so basically from there, you know, I just went downhill, ended up being on methamphetamine I was on it since I was 14. And like, I'm 38 now. And I look back at 14 years old and I think, far out. You know, I was just really broken, and I didn't feel like nobody understood me. And I felt for my parents now, you know, like as I'm an adult, because I look back and I think, far, how could they control me? Because I was out of control. And then in and out of social welfare, then running away, then getting caught up in gang life, drug life, alcohol, everything. And pretty much everything that's under the sun, the worst things that a wahine could ever go through, I went through at such a young age. So, you know, it's not really blaming anybody or any particular lifestyle that's out there, because there's all different lifestyles, but it's just unfortunate that the things that I went through happened to be in the environment I was in, you know. So go through all of that. Yeah, so going through all of that, I went through a hardship of, just trying to fight. I ended up caught up in the crimes, you know, just getting convictions and fighting, ended up getting nearly 29 convictions, and for wahine, for me, that's a lot. You know, I know a lot of fellas out there and probably other wahine that have got a couple of hundred, but to me, 29 was a lot, because, you know, it's not drug or alcohol, it's just all straight fighting and police chases and no driving and all of that stuff. So once I got my first conviction, I was gutted, because, to be honest, even though I still went through all the traumatic things, I still had a dream, you know, like Tupac was my idol. LA, Los Angeles was my dream, and, you know, and I had that right from a young age, and that was just from simply finding the Rhythm Volume 4 on our dirt driveway when I was like 7 or 8. And so music was one of my biggest, you know, my life jacket, just, you know, disappear in music or jump on a horse and go trek up the bush and go and sit in front of Mount Totowera for hours, be gone for hours just to run away from all the mean stuff, because throughout that whole childhood and teen, I felt I didn't have any mana, you know, like, because I wasn't taught that. I wasn't taught to have mana, but yet my nan on the other end, my nan Yala Fraser Taylor, she was all about tikanga, about our marae. I was always at the marae with my nan. So I basically stayed with my nan a lot just to get away from all the things that used to happen to me. So you know, just being a drug addict at such a young age and then taking it all back home to my cousins and then getting them all wasted and far, you know, it was just, I had no one. No one could, no one wanted to really invest in the time for me to really be like, what's really going on, or even have a bit of patience to just give me, you know, to try and probably help prevent some of the things I eventually ended up going through. It took me a long time to really learn, not so much what's right and what's wrong, but to really accept that, you know, these things really did happen to me, because I was so strong, you know, and so like, no, no, I'm all good. I was always the class clown and happy and stuff, but deep down I carried suicidal depression on a daily. And so, you know, I went through all of that. And, you know, I look at it like you can't expect anybody to actually act right or make any good decisions with themselves when they're carrying carrying that kind of hara. So,
Kia ora, sister. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just am so moved by your sharing, and I want to ahead to your beautiful bravery to share this kōrero. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking, wow, there will be so many people, particularly our rangatahi, that will get so much from this. And one phrase came up to me, and turning your pain into power. And I really can hear that through your kōrero. It sounds like you've really processed so much of it, and are at a point now where you can look back on it with hindsight and kind of analyze what was happening to you, and you can see the very clear relationship between trauma and mamai and carrying that mamai, and then that coming out through your behaviors. And I think of our people, you know, that our people have been through so much trauma, and their nanny and their koroi, everyone, generations back, you know, have been through so much trauma. But it's beautiful to hear you talking like this, and I think probably very healing for many people to almost to be kind with themselves, to be gentle with themselves, you know, that sometimes some of the most beautiful people go through some of the hardest stuff, and it actually, you know, but there's another saying that I've used before. I love a person that can walk through the flames and come out carrying buckets of water for those still consumed by the fire.
That's me.
Yeah, it's a good one, eh?
I've always been that person. Like, even when I was going through all of that, you know, I had more love to give than to reciprocate back the hate that was given to me, you know. And I don't know why. I just wanted love, and I always thought to myself, if only they knew, you know, if only they knew that, you know, like, what I feel is real, like, you know.
Your
but
heart.
Life just doesn't really work like that, you know. So I went through a whole lot of carrying all of that mamai, and then it just took this one day, which was in 2009, August the 29th. June the 5th, 2009. And that's when I finally broke. I was at a point where I had everything at the table that every woman would have wanted, even still to this day, from drugs, money, dudes, you know, everything. Connections, networking, all that stuff. And yet I didn't have my sons, you know, because I became a young parent. I had two kids by the time I was 17, and, you know, I didn't get them taken off me, but I'm dumping them at my parents because I'm like, here. And my dad's like, what the hell? And I'm thinking, and I just said, nah, you have to take them, because I don't know when I'm going to stop, because my parents couldn't help me, because, you know, at that time, I didn't understand why they couldn't help me, because they're my mum and dad. But when I look back at it now and I think about the extreme behavior and the character that I was being because of all the bottled stuff and all the life things that I was being about, I don't think anybody could handle that, you know. So you know, like I ended up just sort of thinking, far out, I've got everything but my kids, my family, and love. Mm. I hate my life, you know, and that was just purely it, you know. I used to sit down and smoke puff after puff after puff, and smoke everybody under the table, be awake for days and, like, you know, like a Wednesday to a Wednesday, and I'm still happy-go-lucky while everyone's crashing, and then, but when everyone's piping back up, I'm crashing, but nobody want to hear me out, you know. So it started to really turn me into an angry person, and then fighting, I always get targeted for being the pretty one. So, you know, being at a club, it was, oh, you know, oh, she's pretty, oh, must be a slut. And so I would just, like, go and rumble them out. Yeah. And then Rotorua, like, I remember the older bros that run Road to Vegas, didn't they? They started to tell me, you know, oh, come down there and do some training down here, because they knew that I was just a bit, you know, like a waste, fighting all in town, being locked up and just constantly going to court for fighting and all of that stuff. And I was just hurt, you know, just a hurt young wahine out there, had no one, had to survive on my own, had to accept that everyone thought I was this and that. And I probably, you know, like real talk, I was, because I just had nothing, you know. Yeah. So, you know, I... Eh?
You know, do kia ora to, you know, for sharing that kōrero. I just want to bring us now into today and where you are now, and especially your mahi for Manawahine, and you're focusing on organising a conference. So tell us about your beautiful kaupapa now.
Okay, so like, obviously I've been doing social media since 2015, because that's when I actually released my life story about all that stuff I was talking about before and more. And so since 2015, it's put me, you know, social media, that's when I put it out there, you know, like, oh, you know, everyone's crying over nothing. How about this? You know, this is what I've gone through and had to carry. But however, sharing my life story put me in a position to actually do life conferences and share my testimony and all of that all across Aotearoa in Australia. And I had no experience, but I just went in there, and I remember the first time I did a conference, and it was over in Whakatāne, and 300 people were there. I thought to myself, heka, what do I say? And they're like, just share your story. And I was like, oh, far out. And I just did it naturally. And then after that, I went to Gisborne, and then next thing, I'm going to Wellington, Porirua, Christchurch, Hamilton, Auckland, and then Sydney, Melbourne. And, you know, it was just like, it was all full on for a whole few years, just sharing my life story in there. But it was under a religious umbrella. Now, through that journey, I sort of just started to dislike it, because I didn't like, there were just certain things I didn't like what religion was doing, which was trying to stop me from really expressing my story. So anyway, since then, came out of that, and I left, stayed quiet for a little bit, and then ended up coming back to Aotearoa, sort of relapsed, and, you know, because I didn't want to be back here, but a lot of things happened. I lost my nan in 2019, lost my uncle 3 weeks later. A lot of hara went on down at Rotorua in that year, and it just broke me. And so since 2019, I knew what to do this time in order to get out. See, before, years ago, I didn't know what to do or how to get out, but this time I did. So I left Rotorua, brought me and my two little ones up to Auckland. I went to TV and film school at South Seas UBs, didn't graduate, but I've got the meanest connections with them, which is cool. So if I ever wanted to make a short film or anything like that, I've got access to do that. And just carried on doing my social media, done a lot of modelling, done a lot of life coaching online with people just throughout the years. And so done quite a few things. And then 2024, coming to the end of 23, I just thought, nah, I can feel it. It's time. It's time for me to actually get up there now, because everyone's doing something for the, you know, to help people out there that are struggling with life. And yet I'm the one that basically really set the tone for this whole movement of why people do what they're doing today to help the community, you know. And so I just started thinking, okay, what do I really want to do? I want to help our wahine, because our wahine are like, they're like, we're like chambers of depth, you know, and we carry, we're so used to, which we shouldn't be used to, but we have more capability of carrying more deeper, heavy things than a lot of men out there. And all I've seen with our wahine these years is just having to put up with so much and putting themselves away, them true selves away, to basically cater or thing for someone else. So the women's conference.
Yes. Aroha mai.
Sorry. So the women's conferences that I've been working on, like, it didn't take me long to actually come up with this, because I've done these things before, but this time I had a lot more to bring to the table. So in these women conferences, you know, some of the topics that I will be going over on day one, you know, I want to be talking about neglect and rejection, sexual abuse, rape, self-esteem, self-respect, identity, whakapapa, parenting, tamariki, drugs, alcohol, grief, sore trauma, addiction, and impulsive decision-making, gangs. These are just some of the topics I want to be discussing. And then on day two, you know, because I want it to be a couple of days, these are in-depth, like, subjects. And, you know, the day two is more about tools and stuff. So, you know, self-esteem strategies, goals, dreams, how to really understand what they are, really, like, the true depth of what real manifestation is, the true depth of what healing is, mentality rebuilding, even right down to clean slate schemes when it comes to the courts and all of that stuff, budgeting, you know, all these things that I've gone through myself to get to where I'm at today and who I am today, sis. I want to teach how I did it, because that's one of the biggest questions that so many people along the years have asked me, how do you do it, sis? And I've never been able to really answer it up until I started creating this conference, and I thought, no, this needs to be out there, you know, identity recovery. Where you know, you and where you are in the world and who you are in the world, you know? So, yeah.
Beautiful. And you have such a big following. What's it up to by now?
Oh, gosh, I know. TikTok is like nearly at 300,000. Facebook is at like nearly 45K. Instagram is, going on to 65K, and it's all authentic followers, you know, and I look after those things.
Yeah, beautiful. So there's, I just want to mahi to you using such an incredible platform with so many followers to do so much beautiful mahi for wahine and for empowerment. And I'm sure that there will be tāne listening as well who are just absolutely taken by your kōrero and can probably relate to elements of it, most definitely. So, sister, we've got about 3 minutes left together. In that time, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, would like to be part of your kaupapa, would like to tautoko you, how can people get in touch with you? How can they, you know, hāpai and aki-aki support your kaupapa?
Well, definitely my social media platforms, they're pretty easy to find, which is Angel Taylor NZ. And anyone that really wants to work if they want to join the kaupapa, you know, would probably be best by email, you know. Yeah.
Right. It's like Angel, email, sister?
Yeah. AngelTaylor22NZ@gmail.com.
Woohoo! Yeah, beautiful. So I will definitely be there. I'm going to be there. I want to, not only not only to tautoko you, but also because all of those things, I work in a lot of spaces too where that kind of kōrero is so important, and I see it impacting tamariki and parents and just people everywhere. Hey, pain. Pain into power, sister. Pain into power. So a final thought. What's a saying that you have held on to through these years? Something that you can give for our listeners to take away and put in their ngako? What's a thought that's carried you?
There's been quite a few, but, you know, one of my main ones is deep talk is real talk.